This is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Jay and Lehman, and today we are going to continue our discussion on the setting slash purpose of the game, starting with Nile Empire. So we did Core Earth last time, and previously we did Living Land, Cyber Papacy, and did we do another one? I think it might have.
It's all a blur. Those.
Yes, it was a few weeks ago. I had Gen Con between then and now. And speaking of Gen Con, I do want to give a shout out to the Infiniverse Iconoclasts. That is a unofficial, but it is a living campaign where you can get a character in their games, and then you can take that character through multiple games. They give you a little sheet, a character sheet, but in addition to that, they give you a mission sheet that the game master of your table signs off of, and gives you your XP or any other thing. So I had a fun time with those guys at Gen Con, so thank you for hosting the games. It was very fun, and just thank you very much. And that is Infiniverse Iconoclast. I know they go to Origins. They might go to some other cons, but they went to Gen Con also. So wherever the con is, you might look up what Torg Eternity stuff, and you might see them. They do have their house rules, but we support the Make Your Cosmverse Your Own. We've talked about that many times on how running your home game is very different than running a game with potentially hundreds of people that come in and out. So they have their house rules, but it was still fun. I had a blast. So having said that, let's go ahead and jump into Nile Empire. We're talking again about the setting slash purpose. The knee-jerk reaction, and not a incorrect action, is to tell people when they say, what's the Nile Empire, is to bring up Indiana Jones and the mummy, Brendan Fraser mummy. So, other than those two things, Jay, what other media sources would you say can expand our listeners, both game masters and players, kind of inspiration for Nile Empire?
Inspiration for Nile. Well, those are the big ones, obviously. okay, here's one that's like an almost sacrilegious pick because it's not a good movie. But Gods of Egypt has, has a bunch of like bigger than life characters. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people do kind of focus more on the pulp action part of the Nile Empire, but also the gods. Mm-hmm. And all of the ancient Egyptian mythology is also a big part of it. Not that Gods of Egypt should ever be misconstrued as being in any way like the actual myths of Egypt.
Right.
But
right.
It's got some stuff in there. Of course, Dick Tracy, any of those kind of old pulpy kind of shows, like The Green Hornet, things like that. I have said in the past, I tend to run my Nile Empire a little more noir. Mm-hmm. Than some people do. So a lot of those kind of movies really help as well. There was something else I was literally just thinking of, and I just lost it. For the Nile, it's a balance of the pulp action and the Egyptian mysticism. So I would say also like Moon Knight, the Marvel series, is a good introduction for that too. Because you also want it to be action-y, but not superhero-y. And although things do get a little up there in that series, it's mostly on a lower level.
Right. So you're not talking superhero, Superman, yeah. Wonder Woman. You're talking more of the pulp heroes, which I would, again, take it for what you want, but movies like The Phantom or The Shadow, those characters are more based off of the pulp comic characters. I would also say things like we mentioned Indiana Jones, but then you have like the Indiana Jones wannabes from the 80s, like the Jewel of the Nile and Romancing the Stone, stuff like that can be part of it. What things would you want to make sure that both players and game masters kind of know about in the Nile to make Nile different than what the other realities are?
So in the Nile, I mean, there's the mechanical differences and then also the setting differences. So of course, the big thing is that Amatism is the state religion. A lot of time people think of the cyber papacy as the theocracy, but technically the Nile Empire is too. It's the state-sponsored religion, and you can get in trouble, for worshipping anything else there. And pretty much the entire population of Egypt was mind controlled at the beginning of the invasion, so there was very little resistance and a lot of conversion that happened. So just be aware that it's pretty much everywhere. And with that, the knowledge that generally speaking, even if you are a priest, you're not really a priest of a specific god. You're of the entire Ennead, and you pray to whatever god is needed at the time. So unlike Isle, where the priests are often very specific, then you have the situation where there's a lot of things that are illegal. The officially the Empire makes a lot of things illegal. However, that's with the idea that they are then available in the underworld. By smugglers and everything, which are of course all working for Mobius in anyways, especially in Cairo. Cairo is where you would go for most of the two-fisted action of heroes fighting villains. Outside of Cairo, it's a little bit different. So the big thing to be aware of for anyone coming in is that they can kind of find whatever kind of thing they want to find. If you're in Cairo or some of the other cities, you're going to get a lot of this like pulp action. But then if you go out into the desert, you do get some of the more mummy sort of exploration, lost temples and pyramids and things to explore. But then you go down to the jungles further south, or even to the Greek islands, you find even weirder things. So there's a lot. But I think probably the most infamous thing is that players love the Nile Empire, specifically because you get an extra destiny card and the power of the possibilities and cosm cards. It's a very player-friendly cosm. But players should be aware that the law of morality there is important. And even if you are a player who normally just kills everybody, it is better for you to, let the villains get arrested or let yourself get captured. So know that playing into the tropes, you might have to fight against your gamer brain, but that's what you should do when you're in the Nile Empire.
And kind of going off with the allow yourself to be captured, which is really sometimes difficult, especially if you come from that adversarial game master, which the first time is going to be the only time your characters ever surrender. If then they're immediately, ha, now I'm killing you. Think you're dead. Well, you shouldn't have surrendered. Okay, you never surrender after that. And Nile Empire is, as much as I didn't want to bring this up as our inspiration, but you brought up Gods of Egypt as a bad movie, but you could find something in it to use the 60s Batman. I didn't want to go camp because that is something that's not. Nile is pre-camp. It's the 30s, 40s, 50s action, not the comic code came in and then you have to, everybody's has to be much nicer and then you get the 1960s Batman TV show. But they always got captured and then the villain gave the monologue and then the villain left and then the Here,
See you
heroes
next
were,
time.
yeah, were able to to take that cliffhanger and then come back after commercial break and
I think that's what a lot of the pulp serials did.
Right.
Even before then.
Right, right. But that part was pulp serial, yes.
Yeah.
But the campiness wasn't as as prevalent. So
no one was tied to a giant sewing machine.
Right. Although if you want that in your Nile, go for it. I could see having like a villain or two that have gone that way. But otherwise, yes, I think that's pretty spot on. Players love the Nile. Players love Core Earth because we talked about all the stuff last time about the Core Earth setting, and in our previous one where we broke down some of the Core Earth Cosm cards and stuff like that. Nile Cosm cards tend to favor the players. Just the world itself tends to favor heroes over villains, which is different than any of the other realities. But there's always the law of inevitable return, which means that those villains or a legacy of that villain will come back. So whether it's the Hooded Cobra keeps coming back and your party hates him, or the Hooded Cobra's daughter comes back as the Hooded Cobra and confuses your party because that's somebody that's not the Hooded Cobra claiming to be the Hooded Cobra. You know, you can do it either or both ways. You can have a lot of fun with that. The thing, even though they're both kind of action when we're comparing Core Earth, Nile Empire is a, you don't stop the action. So in Core Earth, can have action moments and it can be an actionish reality, but Nile Empire as a player expect that if you and the party sit down to have a discussion, if it takes too much time, something's going to happen to interrupt that. And as a game master, make sure that when the party starts taking a little too long to decide a course of action, that some action will come to them that they immediately have to make a decision on.
Probably the most useful page in the Nile Empire book, and it's also in the screen, is the obstacles chart on page 83, where it's just, because, you know, as a game master, you can't think of something every time, right? I even use this chart outside of the Nile Empire. If there's a setback and I can't think of something, I'll roll on this.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, like almost every round or so, you should just keep adding more and more things. Like eventually something will catch on fire.
Right.
But like some innocent civilians will come. Someone will drive through a pane of glass. It just always keeps getting bigger and bigger. And like just think of Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of like little set pieces that start relatively innocently and small, but just steadily ramps and ramps and ramps up until by the end there's like blimps falling out of the sky and like all kinds of things. So one of the things is to just not be afraid to go for it.
Right.
In the Nile Empire, it's kind of like if you've ever played Feng Shui, where Feng Shui is an interesting game because it was different in that the more outlandish the thing you said you were trying to do was, the better of a bonus you would get. Whereas in most games, it makes it harder. So I kind of look at the Nile Empire that way. If someone tries something ridiculous, I wouldn't give it a negative as bad as I would other places. Or it is one of the few realities where I will give them a possibility if they pull off something that they made much harder for themselves than it needed to be. Because usually I've found giving roleplay possibilities is kind of a bit much. But in the Nile Empire, players love them so much, they spend them like candy. You kind of want everything to be big and bombastic in the Nile Empire, so I don't have as big a problem giving it to them.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. Nile Empire is one that is most often players' favorite reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then you love it, and nobody, I don't think, hates it. Like, you know, there was some hate for Orosh, but there are the, since everybody loves it, I'm going to be contrary.
I will say it is probably my least favorite, but I don't hate it.
Right, right. But it's one that even if it's your least favorite, you can have a lot of fun in it. I think it could get a little exhausting if that's all you're doing. So it's good to, I would see it as good as in shorter bursts. As we explained when we went over to the Fires of Ra, cutting out a couple of those acts, maybe using them later or in a different time would work, just because sometimes it gets to be too much. Like, just so you want it while you're there to be much and verging on too much and maybe going past too much, but you don't want to do constant too much. Otherwise it gets a little exhausting. So,
and also, like, some players kind of make, and again, every Cosmverse is your own, but some people do make the mistake of attributing the Nile Empire to Torg.
Yes.
Like, and think because Torg is a cinematic action game at its core, that it's always going to be as wild as the Nile Empire.
Right.
And no, the Nile Empire needs its own flavor. It's like the Nile, core Earth, everything else. Borish. Kind of like that. You know, so don't expect that the things you try in the Nile Empire will work everywhere else.
Yes, well. And I know I've written about this before. I'm not sure if I've said it on this series or not, but just to say it, I think a lot of people have that kind of misconception that all of Torg Eternity is similar to the Nile Empire, because if you think about it, the way the books were released were very close to how they originally were released, and that was intentional. The downside, in my opinion, on that is the living land, even though it's harsh, there's the law of life, and things, and in that respect, could, and you have miracles that it can heal and all of that. So
it's a resurrection.
Right. And so it was, it could hurt, but it was still some type of pulpiness to it, some type of life aspect on it. Then the next thing that came out was Nile Empire, which has all the big boom, boom, boom stuff. Even though
Core, also a resurrection,
and yes, also a resurrection, and it's clearly in the player's kind of favor. And then you have Core Earth as a backdrop. It, you know, source book's not out, but it's very much also action and the law of hope and the law of glory, law of the underdog, kind of give that boost to Storm Knights. And then sequentially, Isle came out. And while there is the whole light versus dark, the light side is, you know, pretty big. You're mages. You're casting powerful spells. You're, you know, powerful
And it gave you clerics, a lot of crazy magic items.
And a lot of magic items, you know, to help the Storm Knights. And then after that, Cyber Papacy was more in the middle. You know, yeah, you can have cool laser guns you can shoot and nice armor and, you know, you can hack the world, you know, type stuff. But then, after that, when you had Tharkold, Aurorish, and Pan-Pacifica that are much more bleak, and a lot of people were like, whoa, what's this, you know, stuff in my Torg game? And it's, no, Torg is the genres and each of these movie genres. So we had the action, die-hard, Core Earth, you know, one. We had the Lord of the Rings one. We had, you know, the Land of the Lost one. Now we have the Gothic Dracula one. We have the Mad Max / Hellraiser one. Those are going to be very different because those are different cinematic experiences. And Torg being a cinematic game doesn't necessarily always mean heroic and the good guys are always going to win, etc. So
there's a lot of different types of cinema.
So while I absolutely understand the reasoning behind the releases and I'm fine with it, the one thing is I think it might have skewed views on what Torg Eternity was, kind of front loading it with all the happy and good, you know, we're Storm Knights and we're gonna win, and then it's like, oh, we're Storm Knights, we're gonna die horribly. You know, we need to get out of this place. So there's a little difference. I don't know.
It's not even a difference of like winning and losing. It's just that, like, with the Nile
at
stuff,
least
you can
perceptive.
Like, you're stunting on them,
right?
Like, it's it's all whiz bang. You don't have to think too hard. Just go in, roll your dice, spend your chips, spend your extra cards. You can pretty much come out on top. I mean, because it is, Mobius is cursed to always get his comeuppance.
Yes.
So, but the other realities, not so much.
Right. And, I mean, I've been on adventures in Aurorsch and Tharkold, and both as a game master and player in Pan Pacifica, and player character Storm Knight deaths aren't as, you know, prevalent as you would think, but there is that fear of it, I think, more. Like, if you had a Storm Knight die in Nile Empire, I think that would be a bigger shock if they didn't come back.
Then
Aurorsch coming back as a ghost, you know, or something, which, you know, or a vampire or a werewolf, they can come back kind of equally, but it's a different type of I'm back, and it's a different sense of I think there's more dread, even if it's a not backed up by the current data. Yes, classic Torg.
Yes.
Classic Torg, whole other thing, we won't get into to that, but for Nile Empire, it's the most bright leaning towards the Storm Knight's reality and go with it, but it's also a very not boring reality, so you want to keep the action going. You want to, as you said, stack the obstacles upon the obstacles, which have some obstacles in them, and the kind of the more the better in the setting. So Nile Empire, I think, is pretty easy. The Mummy, Indiana Jones, kind of very solidly puts it in there. Give the overtone of you have the Amatism as the main religion, which when you were talking about cyber papacy, at least the cyber papacy, they want you to choose to become, you know, to follow.
Right.
I mean, sure, they'll burn you as a heretic, you know, if you are, if you don't, but they want you to choose their way, but they at least want you to make a decision. Whereas Mobius was just like, mind control you all. And now, no choice at all. So that's a very scary thing. So it's not always happy behind the mechanics, so, you know, what Mobius is. He's still an evil, evil person, High Lord. He's not your comical villain.
That's the thing. It's easy to think of him as a comical villain, but if the players ever encounter him, he shouldn't be.
Right.
Like, the Hooded Cobra can be a little comical.
Yes.
But Mobius should not.
Right. So let's move on. So
I did have one thing. If for GMs, and maybe players, but if you are playing in the Nile Empire, you should probably prepare ahead of time a few extra just random pulp villains and pulp heroes in case of connections or, you know, just things happening. Mm-hmm. It's good to just have like another hero. Who's this? It's the Sand Beetle, you know, show up and help, or, you know, because not only can obstacles pile, but also just like weird things can happen with causing cards. So just be prepared, have at least the name ready. Mm-hmm. So you're not sitting there going, oh God.
Not only am I having to think of a name, I have to having to think of a hero name.
Yeah. What kind of power they got? Okay.
Yeah. So yes, good information there. But let's go on and move to Aurorsch, which then would be a complete flip side. So
yes.
On this, the two knee-jerk reactions almost are opposite ends of a spectrum, in my opinion, which I'm going to give. So this is one you and we've talked about it before, but you're definitely going to have to, as a table or as a, and or as a game master, determine what the purpose of your Ourorsh is. Because horror can have many different flavors. And when I look at Ourorsh on one end, I'm thinking Bram Stoker's Dracula. You know, even if it's the one with Keanu Reeves, that's the Dracula, the movie I love, and the one that comes to my mind when I think gothic horror, cinematic for gothic horror. But then when you look at things like Monster Hunters and stuff, I completely shift to the other side of the spectrum, and I'm thinking Van Helsing.
Yeah.
So they're very, very different. And one of the things as a game master, you're going to have to decide which side you lean towards, if you lean towards, or if you do both, how you're going to balance it and to communicate that to your players. Because you will have very, very different games if you go after Ourorsh as Van Helsing. And this is the mental image I have of, you know, Monster Slayers and all this. Or Dracula, where we got to spend time to figure out stuff and put clues together. And, you know, you don't go guns blazing.
You have to put clues together in Van Helsing.
Right, but it's that side has the big explosions and guns and action and stuff, mm-hmm. where the other one is, there are some action moments, but you just know a vampire versus a person, the vampire is going to, you know, win no matter what. So to me, it's finding that balance, finding which aspects of those you want, and then communicating that to your players. Because when Ourorsh was being written, and we developers were talking about it, authors were talking about it, and the players were talking about it, there were lots of different, very opinionated opinions going that were very contradictory to each other, because different people had different views on what Ourorsh should be. So having said that as a preamble, Jay, what are your kind of experience, or your inspirations or whatever for Ourorsh you would think about?
So using your scale, the way I think of it for my game is that the realm is Dracula, mm-hmm. right? Or more Hammer horror Dracula, uh-huh. right? So it's dangerous. It's, you know, if you mess with it, it'll go badly. The Storm Knights specifically are Van Helsing. Mm-hmm. So they come in, they start like rocking stuff. But there was a lot of civilian casualties in Van Helsing,
mm-hmm.
and there is more in Ourorsh. So they might have some protections, but everyone else doesn't. And it's one of those things where I look at it as they might not die, but they might still lose.
Mm-hmm.
So Ourorsh isn't necessarily about going in and just killing a thing. Now I was thinking of other things that are good inspiration. There's the video game Darkest Dungeon. If anyone's ever played that, like, that is the tone. Like, it's dark and it gets darker as you go. And the players are responsible for being the light.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're supposed to be the ones bringing hope back to everybody, because the whole thing is the Gauntman is dimming the hope and just surviving off of fear and horror, right? So the players are responsible for that. And if they're just going around killing stuff and not really doing anything else, it's not really helping to restore the hope. So that is one of the... And just like the music and the voice of the narrator is just perfect for it. After that, classic haunting movies, mm-hmm. like The House on Haunted Hill or The Haunting. The original Haunting is still like one of my favorite movies, because they... And this is something I'm going to get into later, but they know how to pace it.
Mm-hmm.
They take their time and set things up. Again, pretty much anything Mike Flanagan related that's come out on TV recently. And another thing that might be controversial, I don't know, any older like slow zombie movies where the zombies are more about the dread, because the zombie is the dark reflection of humanity. Like, what is humanity? We are the apex endurance predator on the planet. And what are zombies? A better endurance predator than us. So it's the inevitability. But specifically, there's a few other movies that I think are very important. The first is one called Betal. It's an Indian movie about, I mean, it's on the cover, so it's not too much of a spoiler, I guess. It's a Indian military squad is, for whatever reason, has to go into this tunnel to clear it for land developers. And they find there's like some mass grave site of British regimental soldiers there that are zombies. And it basically causes this whole zombie brigade to trap them in there, and they're having to fight these colonial zombies, and a whole bunch of crazy stuff happens. It's great. It's like the perfect Orosh movie in my mind. And of course, recently, RRR is good too. That's another one where there's a lot of good fighting and everything. It can get over the top the way things do when people spend possibilities. And it both of those also bring to my mind one of the important things that kind of gets forgotten sometimes is that it's in India or Sri Lanka or Myanmar. You know, it's not... I don't know, like, what the percentage is, but, like, for my game group, like, I think we're batting 100% of all Orosh characters have been Victorians. Right? I don't know how many people... I know in Torganized Play I've run a few Indian Orosh characters, but I think so. It's one of those things, like, sometimes even the GMs forget, and it's just all Victorians all the time. Right. You gotta remember, there's still the Indian people there. The government is kind of screwed, right? But it still exists, because it does talk about Quinn Sebastian talking with them, right? So they weren't completely wiped out at the very beginning. And the Indian military, the longer this goes on, whatever remnants of it there are get kind of folded into the Victorians. But just remember that they mention a bunch of the other cultures that came from Gaia in the... In the Orosh book, but those and the Victorians themselves are just a small percentage of the people actually in Orosh. So remember to keep that flair. There's all the Victorian slums and soot and like all that going on, but also there's still temples. It's not all the Sakhalum or Sassalum or whatever. It's kind of in a minority now, so it's finding itself in a new situation. So that's my big thing, is just to remember what else is in the realm there.
Right, and I think that is a very good point. The Gaian refugees are a vast minority compared to the... I mean, even with wiping out as many people as were on the Night of a Thousand Screams, there's still a significant population that's left. And it's not them. It's not like they were all just wiped out and the Victorians came and were like, oh, free land.
It wasn't that type.
Well, right. Well, it was in the past, not quite. not exactly how it works. But there's still a lot of people that are from that country, you know, from those countries, not necessarily, like you said, just everybody's Victorian with the British accent, and, you know, they might be wearing clothes like that.
Yeah, they're dressed and maybe speak like Victorians,
but they're they're still not. So that is also a very good point. One of the things I wanted to also bring up is it's very important for players to know that morality is very important in Orosh, because you will be tempted constantly to turn a blind eye to something bad going on, or to justify an action as being the lesser of two evils, or finding a way to justify that, no, this evil act is actually good, you're going to get corruption checks. And corruption is something through temptation. You will be tempted to do the bad thing and try to rationalize it, to ignore it, because you're from Tharkold and you're saying, oh, in Tharkold we wouldn't investigate a baby crying, or because that's going to be a monster. But in Aurorsh, if a Storm Knight says that, it's a corruption check, because that might actually be an infant crying in a bad situation, and leaving it is a evil thing. So do you want to chance that? Or, you know, if somebody asks you for help and you're certain that they're not, you know, really a lost traveler in the woods, you know, that's asking, can you please shelter me at your camp, because you were certain that it
please
is
invite
a,
me in.
A creature, you know, that is going to attack you in the night, that could be a bad moral choice, might lead to corruption. So be very aware of how that is tempting, and you will, as players, try to justify your action. And as soon as you start to try to justify in Aurorsh, you might as well say, I'm doing something that's not right, and, you know, let me roll against my willpower to see if my charisma goes down.
And God help you if you have a cursed perk already.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that was something that I wanted to bring up, because in Nile Empire you have the heroes are heroes, villains are villains morality, but it, again, Aurorsh is twisted. It's gothic horror. It's evil. It has a morality divide, but it's attempting you to take those logical choices towards doing the wrong thing. You know, so that I think is important for both players to know, because that was another thing. Aurorsh had a lot of opinions going around, and corruption being a should it ever be forced, is it always a choice? Sometimes the choices are bad. You have two bad choices.
Yeah.
You know, and but it is something that I will say has been brought up for year two, and we are going with their choices, but sometimes the choosing to not take the corruption test is going to be really difficult to live with. So that's, you know, the temptation to go to corruption is going to be there. So that's something I just wanted to state. Do you have anything else? I guess the other thing, not necessarily the medieval period-ish Witcher, but I think a lot of the creatures could be really good inspirations for Aurorsh creatures, nightmares, horrors, stuff like that. I think could and the way that sometimes they have to investigate what is it leaving, you know, the victims, what do the victims look like after they've been, you know, killed by the horror? Oh, these markings, these things, this might be this type of horror. And then, unlike, say, your Isle dark monsters, undead or whatever, your Egyptian mummies and stuff, the high powerful horrors and stuff all have their unique true deaths. So what worked against that vampire as a true death might not work against the other vampire as a true death, because they're unique and individual, and it might not take upon the normal TV tropes.
Yeah, and I realize now, I forgot, like, one of my one of the best inspirational movies for Aurorsh is Sleepy Hollow.
Ah, yes.
That's a good one too. because that focuses on the investigation part of it too. That's always been one of the things, like you say, if you go into Aurorsh and treat it like the Nile Empire, it's going to go poorly.
Yes.
You need to know what's going on. So as I mentioned previously, players need to be ready to take it slow. Mm-hmm. You don't want to just face the big bad right away. You want to find out what's been going on. I could guarantee you your GM has a bunch of NPCs with information that he's raring to give to you. So you're just going to need to actually talk to people and investigate. But I did. That does bring me to one of the things I wanted to mention, and Mark's not here to say not to do this. So, nightmares are cool, right? Like nightmares, and they have unique powers, and you have to do the research and everything. Not every Ouroboros adventure needs a nightmare.
Right.
If you use them every time, just like nightmare trees or chases or DSRs, you know, if it's all the time, it could get less special.
Mm-hmm.
So try to, you know, there exists like different layers for a reason. So there's monsters,
mm-hmm.
then there's horrors, and then there's nightmares. Right. So the PC should probably be, especially at alpha, they should be dealing mostly with horrors. Like there'll be monsters, which are the whatever they're fighting throughout the adventure, and then they deal with a unique horror of some kind. And then eventually, once they get to a point, they'll be dealing with a horror, which is an, sorry, they might be dealing with horrors more naturally, but eventually they'll deal with a nightmare, which is something they have to take really, really seriously. And there's a tendency with Torg, especially in the initial Delphi Council missions book, to just like really throw everything at you at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, we've done the intro adventures and we've used all of the most powerful monsters in the book. So as a GM, you know, don't feel you have to throw a nightmare in all the time.
Right. And also as a player for nightmares, remember that if you kill them without their true death, they'll come back stronger. So mm-hmm. that's very important. Again, for a Storm Knight to be thinking, I have to do this correctly, because if I do it wrong, it's going to come back, and however many people it's killed and lives have been disrupted by it this time, it's going to be worse when it comes back. So that's something to think about. Your point on Sleepy Hollow was actually really good, because with the Johnny Depp one, he even has some like weird devices and stuff that
yeah.
can kind of get into the little bit of steampunkish. That
I may have used some of those in the Complete Storm Knight's Guide to Monster Hunters.
And the story itself doesn't necessarily have a happy ending. So,
yeah.
So, you know, even showing even the heroes and the good guys don't always get their happy ending when they do everything right. I know I've said it before, but I'll say it again. I did play and won the A Trifling Matter Mega Adventure, and I took a scholar character that had no combat skills, had alchemy, and I like gave out some of the alchemical stuff, you know, like to help people, and it was mainly like, I'm taking this one to hide from horrors. You guys do all of that stuff, and once you defeat them, then I'll come in and use my evidence analysis and my find and all my scholar stuff. So, here's some sunlight in case, you know, it goes
yeah.
bad or against a vampire. But otherwise, I'm going to be, like, hanging back here because that's kind of a gothic horror trope that I tend to do is... or think along that as soon as a character has a cool weapon, then that cool weapon becomes their solution.
Right.
And
it becomes their character.
Yeah. And if you can't take out something in a Rorsch, with like a hit or two, especially before you know all the things for a nightmare leading up to its true deaths, and getting rid of its regenerating possibilities, it's just going to get you killed. You know, so you leave it until you know everything. So it is much more of an investigative slow burn, like you said. It's not something you just want to jump into and where is the end boss? I'm going to kill the end boss right now. No, it's a, we got to figure out about this. We got to learn stuff about it. learn about its minions, learn about its history, its past, and even for the horrors versus the nightmares, just figuring out that it's actually a horror and not a nightmare might be worthwhile. So then you know, oh, I don't need to know a true death. I can just fight it. But you want to know that information before you jump into that fight, because if you think that it's just a horror and it is a nightmare, then you're going to have a rough day.
It's also worth noting that, like, as you were mentioning, lots of devs talking about having different opinions. Mm-hmm. Some of those even came out in the promotional materials beforehand, and people say, oh, it's horrors, you're all good to die. And in reality, that's not really the case. There's two things. As I mentioned previously, you could all survive but still fail the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Gaunt Man still wins, but you don't necessarily die. I mean, Talmas Scratch is like batting, like, he's won so many times in Torkenized play. But other things is, there's a bunch of different safety valves that the GM can use in orders. Like, first of all, if you do die, there's always a take back. You can take that doomed perk, right? Or you could potentially, as Lehman mentioned previously, become a werewolf, become a ghost, become a vampire. How that happens is always a little iffy. Like, does it have to be caused by a werewolf, or can it just happen if I fall down a pit? You know, that sort of a thing. But also there's the law of the uncanny, which is more of a TPK situation. So as a GM, you can actually be like unafraid of having ridiculously powerful creatures. And if they do get a TPK, then the party just wakes up. They're back in their carriage again. I guess it never happened. And you can say that, oh, they're all now marked somehow. What does it mean? Nothing, actually. But, you know, you don't tell them that, right? Let them worry about it. But now, you know, so now they've even gotten information about what's happening in the adventure, and they can try again. And again, it's one of those things you don't want to do too often. But it's like, if things got out of control, it's better to do that than to just start like flubbing rolls and then have like an enemy suddenly be like, oh, and then just get killed. It's a lot more Aurorsh-y that way.
Yes. And I love the uncanny aspect, because you as a game master can use that in lots of ways. In Torgor Treat, I sprinkled some of that into the writing, and I had to make sure that the editors didn't edit certain things that seemed wrong, because I'm like, no, these are intentional things. So for the observant people for Torgor Treat, if you look through some of it, you'll notice some inconsistencies that are on purpose, not bad editing. But as you said, it could be you wake up and now your group has a shared memory, but nobody else has any clue what you're talking about. If you would bring it up, like, hey, remember yesterday when we came to you and that, I never saw you before in my life. What are you talking about? And the group's like, we did do that, right? And they're talking with each other. Yeah, we did that. So that it could be very, very interesting, as well as presenting the bleeds. I think are fun. They are kind of a flip side of the Law of Wonders from Living Land, which are like Aurorsh remembering its heinous deeds and destroyed realities, and kind of bringing back little moments through that. So there's a lot of cool stuff with Aurorsh. It's definitely one that players need to be cautious in, but it's not the same as classic Torg, when the actual source book said have your players make secondary characters, you know, because they might not want their normal characters to die. That's something we definitely don't want, you know, in Torg Eternity. And one of the things in the core book as a reason to go to Aurorsh is sometimes you have to go to the, you know, the monster's den to eliminate it. That's a point, but Aurorsh, while scary, while fearful, Storm Knights can overcome the obstacles. It's not the the perseverance gives me, as a game master, points that I feel like I'm Oprah, and I go to, you know, I calculate the points, total them, or times them by the number of players, which, as you know, I have lots of players, so then I have tons of points, and I'm like, hey, you're marked for death, and you get a marked for death, and you get a marked for death. Everybody gets marked for death. And my players are just like, why are we playing this game? You know, this this absolutely sucks. It's not that. We want it to be scary. We want you to be cautious in Aurorsch. We want you to have those thoughts of Sleepy Hollow, the good guys don't always win. Dracula, it's dread, and these beings are powerful and out of your league for the most part. But then we also kind of want to show, like we said with Van Helsing, that you will, and or you can, not you will. And that's the thing. You can get to a point where you can do that. It's just you have to take an active path to get to that point. It doesn't start off at that point.
So, like, you actually, because one of the last thing I have written here is dread, not terror.
Yes.
Right. So, like, terror is what happens in Tharkold. Whereas dread is like a slow build up. Like, as the players explore, they should be getting more and more fearful about things, not just something jumping out boogity boo. Now there are like slashers.
Right.
Cat jump scares and things in Aurorsch, but that shouldn't be the focus. It should always be things that they have to think about, and the implications of things that get them going, not just seeing a gribbly monster, although there are gribbly monsters.
Yes, and that's a really good point. Tharkold is the blood splatter, everybody's dead.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Tharkold would want. Tharkold would want just something to drop down and explode and everybody dies.
Everyone's skin flies off.
and then people come later and go, oh, that looked like that hurt. You know, that's bad. Where we talked about, the Gaunt Man has figured out that fear is the flip side of hope. And fear can help generate that possibility energy through the spread of kind of what I would say ghost stories. Of whereas the law of hope, to do glorious and to get the possibility, and you give those stories of glory, those stories of heroics that have happened. Where the Gaunt Man, he wants to take out a village but leave a few survivors so that they can go and they can give first-hand witness accounts to the terror that is now going to come to that town and get people dreading, keep people fearful, to kind of build up that possibility energy and the, you know, the flip side of a coin. It's not the hope side, because he's the Gaunt Man, it's the fear side, yeah. You know, and then people get all fearful, and the stories start making their imagination, you know, go wild in a bad way. So that's kind
Though, much like the Matrix, he did discover you do need to give them a bit of hope.
Yes.
You can't get rid of all of it.
Yeah, you have to give it but he does it through fear. You know, he like, that's why he allowed the Sekelum to, you know, exist, and why he probably allows monster hunters and stuff, you know, and alchemists to be able to do some anti-monster, anti-nightmare, terror, or horror things, just so that it gives that sliver, but it's never he would like it to give that sliver, but it's never going to be enough to amount. And if you go back to our Aurorsch episode, we specifically talk about how all the axioms are kind of just enough to give hope, but not enough to actually do something with it, you know. So it's kind of like enough that you're like, I can do it, but you really can't. and he's made it that way. So I think we did a pretty good job describing the setting and the purpose and what you might think about as a game master and a player for your group for Nile Empire and Aurorsch. Will return next time Doing the same thing, we have Pan Pacifica and Darkhold left, so we got a couple
happy
more of
places.
Those. Yes, very happy places. So, having said that, you can email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. We'll answer any questions you have to the best of our ability. We'll comment on your comments, etc. But until then, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmiverse. Bye.